You're listening to the Dana and Parks podcast on KMBZ.
No.
I was like, who's that strange man on the radio?
Leaving voicemails is a dangerous game.
Mm, on this show it is. Play the whole thing for Commander Reed. Well, and his daughter Evelyn.
Do a fantastic job fading this song down first. Okay, we are faded?
Yes.
It's me. I'm still sick. Call me.
I was like, is that gone?
I'm like a man. And then we're off on Monday, so I'm not going to see you until Tuesday. Call me. Bye.
Is this a scene from Lord of the Rings?
My precious. I found the ring.
Yes. Play it again.
We call this little segment Sick or Not.
No, wait. Stop. Push pause. I want to start from the beginning. I want you to hear, it's me. Listen for the fake cough coming up here in just a second.
Are we ready?
We're ready.
Sick or not on Data and Parks.
It's me. I'm still sick.
And what was that? The gulping?
I sound like a man. And then we're off on Monday, so I'm not going to see you until Tuesday. Call him. Bye.
Call bye.
That would have been awesome if someone in the background was like, hey, you done in there? Let's go.
Clear the green.
Clear the green.
For
Dana and her party.
Dear me.
In all seriousness,
it's your
Dana,
tea
we
time.
Hope you feel better.
Oh, she feels fine.
Very soon.
And we only hope that you birdie on 18.
God, that's good.
You were going to tell a story.
Oh, yeah. A sea story. That's what I meant to call it. Not a war story, a sea story.
Okay,
yeah,
tell a good sea story.
You got a few minutes? Can we do this?
Yeah, go ahead, please. Of course. Why wouldn't we?
All right. Vulgarity, please.
No, there's no vulgarity.
No cussing like a sailor.
No. There's an accent, though.
What kind of an accent?
British.
Oh, that's fine.
What kind of accent were you afraid of?
Well, we can make fun of them.
Ones that we cannot. Anyway.
Okay.
Let's just say if you did, like, if you tried to mimic somebody from East Asia or Mexico or something like that,
I got you.
We could end up in a little
like
bit.
A South Park episode kind of thing.
Yeah, we could probably end up in a little bit of trouble.
Okay, fair enough. So that's not happening.
But if you're mimicking a Brit, a no problem.
Okay, yeah,
no problem. Go ahead with your story.
All right, so it's 2007, and we're in the North Arabian Sea, which is just outside the entrance to the Arabian Gulf. More people know that as the Persian Gulf. Mm-hmm. It's right off the coast of Pakistan, and that's where we're hanging out. John C. Stennis was the ship that I was on at the time. And I take off one evening, and I'm flying with one of my best friends in the Navy. He was the guy who actually inspired me to go to Top Gun. His name is Rob Kim, call sign Lick.
Why was his call sign Lick?
Lick Kim, Lickum.
Got it.
Or call sign, make fun of his name, yeah. So Lick and I blast off. He's the flight lead that night, and I was a pretty junior wingman still at the time. I wasn't a flight lead yet. And we go up through Pakistan, and we get in Afghanistan, and what you did in Operation Enduring Freedom, what we did at that point was we would show up and we would do a mission called XCAS, which is where you just go hang out in an assigned area and kind of wait for something to happen. You had all these different forces on the ground, special forces, Army, Navy SEALs, other foreign NATO forces. And we would go hang out and just kind of wait for something to happen. So it's nighttime.
Just circle around?
Yeah, we would be given assigned a kind of a regional area, if you will, kind of an area of operation where we would hang out and we would just hold and kind of conserve our fuel. And we'd have a jet full of weapons and just kind of wait for someone basically to need our help.
And were you already Top Gun at this point?
No. This is before all that. So, but this was the guy, I'm flying with the guy this night who inspired me to do that and kind of motivated me to do that.
Nice.
And he's one of my best friends to this day.
Good.
So we're hanging out, we're flying. And we called it the voice of God, the controlling agency there over Afghanistan comes up over the radio and says, our call sign that night as a flight was Mischief 2-1. That was our flight call
Mischief
sign.
Mischief 2-1.
Yeah, everyone on an air tasking order, which is all the different air assets in a theater, you're given a specific call sign every night. And ours was Mischief 2-1 that night. And so the voice comes up and says, hey, Mischief 2-1, we need you to proceed to this area. Right now we've got a TIC, which stands for troops in contact. So meaning somebody's under attack, they need some help. Mm-hmm. So we go bustering over there. We show up on the area and I remember Lick. So we had our own frequency that we could talk on, kind of like we here in the studio, we talk on our own little frequency to Sam. Nobody else can hear it. same idea. We're Lick and I are talking on our frequency, and he comes up and he goes, "All right, Ahab, we're getting ready to check in. Are you ready for this?" I'm like, "I'm ready." And I hadn't seen a whole lot of combat at this point. And he says, "You ready for this? Let's do it." So he goes, "All right, stand by for the check-in." And we switch frequencies, and now we're on the frequency that the guy's on the ground, that we don't know what's going on. We don't know anything yet. We just know where we were told to go. And so he comes up on the radio, and he goes, "Mischief 2-1, checking in, ready for tasking." We kind of wait, cricket. Tries again, "Mischief 2-1, flight of two F-18s, ready for tasking." And then we hear the microphone key on the other end, and all you hear is, da, 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 ding, oh. Ding, 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 like bullets hitting and firing.
Yeah. So and this is legit.
Yeah. So if you ever hear a noise that makes your blood freeze, this is one of those moments for me. I hear this on the radio and I think, oh my gosh, I can't, what's going on down there?
Right.
And now he goes, all right. He kind of like almost like Lick telling me to buckle up. He comes up on our frequency and he goes, all right, dude, something's going on there. He's like, we got to be ready to go. You ready, Ahab? I'm ready. He goes, okay, I'm going to try one more time. And he's got a sense of urgency in his voice. And he goes, "Mischief 2-1, flight of two F-18s. We are ready to help you. What do you need?" And we hear the microphone key again and a lot of machine gun fire. And then we hear the most cheerful British voice I've ever heard in my life comes up and goes, "Oh, cheerio, Mischief. Welcome to the fray." And I'm just like, what is happening here? And he goes,
"Do they
he goes,
give you coordinates then or what?"
Yeah, so then he comes up and we have this whole conversation with the guy. And by the way, every time he keys the microphone,
oh, cheerio,
you hear bullets flying in the background and hitting things. He's like, "Well, we're in a bit of a pickle here, Mischief. Say when you're ready for the situation report." Ready for the situation
report?
We're ready.
Been ready for about 5 minutes.
"Well, we're surrounded by the enemy and we're around a large burning building on the ground. Say when contact. And contact means, do you see what I'm talking about? So we're up there, we're at 14,000 feet. It's pitch black night, no moon. And all we have is night vision goggles. And we're over Afghanistan, which by the way, most of that country doesn't even have electricity where we are. So, wow. So we look down and there's a giant fireball on the ground. And we say, yeah, we see the fireball. He's like, well, if it's happy with you, I need you to come in as low and as fast as possible. And hopefully keep the buggers' heads down long enough for us to make a retreat. How's that sound with you? Is that happy with you, Mischief?
Is that happy with you?
Yeah, it's a kind of a British. I'm not doing a very good job of it. But essentially, you know, that's how they speak. And he's just so cheerful. And there's bullets flying in the background still. And so what's cool is Lick was super experienced. And I was new. And he goes, hey, this is you, man. He's like, this is your chance. And if we need a break, let me tell you.
No, we're fine. So, I was just checking where we were.
And so he goes, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to fly high cover for you. I'm going to hang out high and you go down and you do this. And what we're doing in this mission here is they're asking for what's called a show of force. There's a lot of times in combat where the bad guys are so close to the good guys that you risk hurting the good guys, friendly mm-hmm, fire, mm-hmm. if you try to employ munitions or something on the bad guys. So they're asking, hey, we want you to come in and try to scare these guys just long enough for us to get away. Hmm. And so I tighten my seatbelt and I'm like, oh man, here we go. I'm about to fly 100 feet over the ground, pitch black at night. I can't see anything. I'm over mountainous terrain.
That's my next question. Yeah. How do you know you're not going to run into a mountain? Afghanistan is incredibly mountainous.
Well, yeah, that's a good question. So we have a thing called a radar altimeter that tells us our actual height above the ground. It's like a radar that bounces off the ground and tells us how high you are. And then I have night vision goggles. Now, everyone thinks this is a great tool, and it is a good tool, night vision goggles, but it's kind of like looking through two little soda straws. And especially on a moonless night, you don't see a whole lot. So I'm pointed towards the ground, trying to pick up speed, and I'm trying to get as fast as I can. And Lick's talking to me the whole time. He's going, all right, man, if I see a missile in the air, I'll call your brake, turn left or right. Just do what I tell you to do. And I start to fly in here. So I'm at 100 feet flying over the ground towards this coordinate this guy had given us in this giant fireball. And I fly right over this fireball at like 500 knots. And as I fly over it, that British soldier keys the mic and I hear the sound of my own jet noise in my ears. Oh, wow. over his radio. And he's like, oh, bravo, well done, Mischief, well done. And I'm thinking, oh my God, I like pull back on the stick. I'm getting altitude above me, like getting away from the ground. I'm like, thank God I survived that. And he goes, if it's happy with you, can you do it one more time for us?
Did you?
Well, of course. What are we going to tell you? Nah, we're good, man. Thanks.
No, we're good. We get you all we got.
we are there to support the troops on the ground. And so came around and did it all over again. And once again, pulled off. And this time he came back and he said, well done, Mischief. That was what we needed. We are retreating. Thank you so much. The next pint's on us. Now, I never...
You never got
never
to meet
met
him,
these
though.
Guys, never knew their names or anything. But that was like a day in the life. of at least the war that I fought.
You ever want to find him?
Oh, of course I do. I have no idea how I do that. I don't know, put a Facebook ad out like, hey, who's the guy in 2007?
Aren't there ways to figure out who was where when?
Yeah, I don't think my memory would even be good enough at this point to go back and figure out what exact mission or day that was or anything. I could look in my logbook, I guess, but
Facebook ad. He said to me, if it would be happy to you, could you do it again?
That could be any British.
It would be happy to you.
If it's happy with you.
Well, no, it's not happy with me, but I'll do it if I have to. It's my job. You moron.
Well, they're so polite, and that's what what really got
Come
me.
On in.
That's what got me, and this is something I actually talk about in some of the public speaking I do, is that your attitude can shape take a pretty bad situation and it can lift other people up. So if you find yourself in grim circumstances or other people are, and you can have a positive attitude, you can not only change the way you view a certain situation, but even the people around you. And that was a big takeaway for me that night, as I thought, how is this guy so cheerful? He's obviously clearly getting shot at.
Because you're
and the next breath could be his last.
Because you're dropping bombs in front of him and he gets to go home now.
Yeah, there you go.
All right, quick break. Don't forget, we have Festivus Friday coming your way right after the 5 o'clock news. That is brought to you by Q39. Get your Q fix today at Q39KC.com. Yeah, Sam and I were talking off the air on this one when it started playing. If that song about Private Malone doesn't give you goosebumps, you have no heart and there is no blood coursing in your veins.
That's right.
It's a deep one.
That's a good one.
By the way, Jesse, somebody on the text line said, since that English guy couldn't buy you a pint, they would be happy to.
Free beer tomorrow.
Also from the text line, tell him thank you from me and all free Americans. I echo the sentiment.
Thank you.
From the Associated Press, a lot of American adults, about 3 in 10, make use of astrology, tarot cards, or fortune tellers at least once a year. But only a small fraction of them rely on what they learn from these practices to make major decisions. That is according to a nationwide survey released earlier this week by the Pew Research Center. They looked at almost 10,000 U.S. adults, so you know it's legit. Anything over 800 is considered a legitimate poll. They did almost 10,000. Overall, according to Pew, about 2 in 10 American adults say they engage in at least one of these activities, mostly, quote, just for fun, but about 1 in 10 say they engage mostly because they believe the practices give them helpful insight. It is a big business. Fortune-telling, psychic readings, palm reading and astrology generated roughly $2.3 billion in revenue last year. Are you a believer or a skeptic?
Two words, Miss Cleo.
You remember her? Was that from Ghost?
No, it was an actual lady on TV.
On TV?
Miss Cleo. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
No, I don't remember Miss Cleo. Oh, was she a 1-800 thing in the middle of the night?
Might have been 1-900, but it was
No, it wasn't 1-900.
Okay. Well, I thought some of those things were 1-900s also.
That was something else.
No, if you Google or YouTube, again, YouTube's my friend. If you YouTube, Miss Cleo, it's pretty funny. There's some good clips.
If you were dialing 1-900, you were drunk and lonely.
All right. Spring break.
I am a skeptic, but
very much a skeptic.
There are a lot of people out there, and I have seen it firsthand, that energy communications and the ability to communicate with the other side. There are people out there that have clairvoyancy and that have the ability to receive messages. Does that mean I'm not skeptical? No, I'm most certainly skeptical. But
Michael Mackey swears by it. And his medium just passed last year, you'll recall.
And his medium is the medium that cracked into my head at a group medium session that I wasn't even supposed to be at.
Tell this story.
See, this stuff creeps me out. You're messing with forces that we shouldn't be messing with. Yeah. That's my opinion here.
They always say that, they know, you know, they knew something about you before. You had to send in some form. Mm-hmm. There was a group medium session at my girlfriend's father's business in Columbia, Missouri, a couple of years ago. And I was at the lake. And so we were like, yeah, we'll come and support, right? Whatever. I was like, mediums. Okay, sure. I'll sit in the bag and have a couple beers. Free booze. Why not, right?
Did you order a medium drink?
Nice. And
I'll see myself.
Man, I cannot remember her name. Stephanie? I think it was Stephanie. Anyway.
Who cares? Who cares what her name was?
She
starts the
session. And again, I'm sitting in the back with this attitude like, these people are kooks. What are they doing? I'm just enjoying an ice cold Heineken. And she gets to the point where she is getting into contact with loved ones of people who were there and receiving messages for them. She goes through a couple of people, and on the third one, she goes, I'm getting a Joseph. And you're supposed to raise your hand when you have somebody in your family or near you who has passed who has that name. And I'm hearing Joseph, and I'm like, well, everybody's name is Joseph. Duh. So I'm not going to raise my hand, right? And then she goes, Joseph Howard. Mm. It's like, well, that's pretty precise.
That's pretty obscure, too, the Howard part.
And
not a lot of Howies in the world.
My sister's dad, who acted as a father figure to me, passed away years ago. And his first and middle name were Joseph Howard. And so, of course, zero hands go up in the room. And she goes, are we sure that nobody in here knows a Joseph Howard? And I, again, in the back, like, whatever. I guess I'll put my hand up. Mm-hmm. So I throw my hand up into the air. And we had just actually come from the lake celebrating his 10-year memorial. It had been 10 years since he had passed. And she told me a series of things that she would have no way of knowing that were very true.
Give me one.
About my life.
Give me one about Joseph Howard. What was his last name? Can you give that?
Juvenile.
Who?
Juvenile.
His last name was Juvenile?
Yeah.
Like Juvenile?
Not spelled that way, but okay. Sure.
His call sign was Juvie.
Juvie.
Okay. Continue.
Come on. We got to give him a call sign. Anyway. I'm twins, for God's sakes.
I still have yet to get a call sign, by the way, Jesse.
So what did she know, Miss Stephanie, that there was no way she had any reason to know it?
The first thing that she said was, did you just throw out a lot of cans, like maybe soda cans? And full disclosure, we drank a lot of beer that weekend. The last thing that I did before I left the lake to go to Columbia was throw out this bag of soda or beer cans. And I was like, yeah. And then she proceeded to tell me the message in relation to the beer cans. I'll leave that part out of it.
Okay.
And then she goes, do you happen to, and, you know, some of it's very generic, and I get that aspect of it. But she was like, do you happen to have, you know, a plethora of bags?
Huh?
And I was like, what does she mean by that? I started to think, like, I've kept every backpack. I still have the backpack that I used in second grade. Because for whatever reason, if it still functions, I'll keep it. And so I've got a very large bag, yeah, right. Borderline, a very large bag of other smaller bags in a closet. And she goes, you know, Joe wanted to let you know that you can get rid of that baggage, which there's messages here. You can get rid of that baggage. It's time to move on and take on something new. And after about 15 minutes, she talked to me the longest. And again, I wasn't even supposed to be there. She had never known who I was. She didn't even know my name as she was talking to me. And again, keyed on three very specific things and proceeded to tell me messages that I really needed to hear in that moment. Like, that she said were from Joe.
Which would be akin to let it go, let me go.
Yeah.
I'm fine. Don't worry about me.
And then the next name they got, she's like, okay, we're done with Howard. Next name, Richie Rich Putin. Do we have a Richie Rich Putin?
Nice.
Somebody who's listening to the 2 o'clock hour. Yes, there's one.
That's my friend. That's my relative right here.
We have an Adolf Hitler Jones.
Only one in the world.
I can't admit it.
A Prendel. Is there a Prendel here?
Yeah. So I am the skeptic of all skeptics. But again, I've had firsthand experience where I was like, well, maybe they actually are able to.
I have no doubt
there
are supernatural forces out there, Sam. I just question their motives.
Well, I don't dispute that from, and I think these are very rare. I think forces on the other side, mm-hmm. whatever that side happens to be, can on rare occasions, when necessary, reach into our third dimension and send us a message or give us a hint. Or, you know, if you're suffering with the loss of your father or your wife or your husband or whatever, that they and you're really suffering, they can reach back and give you a hint that I'm okay. We're good. I think it's extremely rare. And I don't think they need to reach through a medium to do it. Why would they need to? when they could just tell you in some way. And I think people see signs and things that may not actually be true. I've heard a friend of mine who lost a very close relative say that whenever they see a dragonfly, for whatever reason, dragonflies seem to be the go-to. That's a sign from this person that I'm still with you. I'm okay. You're going to be okay. And here I am. I'm a dragonfly that lives for 14 days.
You also have to know what to look out for, because Scott, you had mentioned how you go to Leavenworth and you talk to your dad.
Yeah, I do.
And you say it's a one-sided conversation.
Not always.
I would disagree with that.
I didn't want to get all weird on everybody yesterday. I'm not convinced that's always a one-sided conversation.
I had a conversation with my cat's ashes.
If you were going to tell me you had a conversation with my dad, I was going to kick you off the show. I had a conversation with your dad once, Scott, and he told me that you're a piece of...
He said, stop trying to cool off the whole neighborhood. Close the door.
913.
That sounds like dad.
913-586-7798. See, they don't write it like this anymore, man. They just don't. I mean, come on. Stuff. That's a great song.
Is that the second Johnny Cash song we've had today?
I don't know.
We had Boy Named Sue earlier, right?
Yeah, we did.
We did. Wow. That's I am so hitting the Johnny heavy today. Sorry about that.
No, please don't apologize.
Play Johnny Cash every break.
Yeah, we don't care.
Dan Weinbaum, that was Evelyn reading the temperatures.
That's Commander Jesse Reed.
Moving in on your job, Dan. Better watch out.
What in the world was that?
She just told me, I want to work with horses someday, but I've changed it to radio.
And so we gave Evelyn her first shot on the radio, sweet 12-year-old Evelyn Reed, Jesse Reed's young daughter. So we gave her first shot. We do it with all the kids on the show. Story here from the USA Today. St. Louis Mayor Kara Spencer will seek a new top emergency official after warning signs failed to be activated ahead of what she called the most horrific and deadly storm St. Louis has seen in her lifetime, including a tornado that killed 5 people and injured dozens. Mayor Spencer placed Sarah Russell, the commissioner of the City Emergency Management Agency, on leave. We reported that part yesterday. Said the department would be led by Fire Captain John Walk until a permanent commissioner has been found. Sarah Russell, the commissioner of the emergency management, and her staff were not in the office on May 16th as the expected storm bore down on St. Louis.
So I mentioned this the other day when we brought this up, and I thought that I had gotten the details confused, that they were at the conference the day of, and then I thought the details were confused that they were actually at the conference the day before. Turns out that I was initially correct. The reason that they did not fire the sirens in an emergency situation is because they were at an emergency situation conference, probably in a seminar, honestly, about turning the sirens on. Maybe we should do a breakout session about what we do when no one's in the office to turn the sirens on.
Don't you think that an emergency response division ought to have like a designated survivor, if you will, where you leave one person behind?
It's not like we
just
didn't
in case.
Know the storms were coming. They moved across the entire United States.
You should probably have somebody standing that watch at all times, I would think.
That's my designated survivor.
Yeah, but here's the other thing, too. This isn't 1950 anymore. We know a week before a major tornado event happens that the conditions are likely that something's going to happen.
Fair.
Right?
Yeah.
So
something tells me they knew for many weeks that this conference was going to be going on.
Yeah, hey Joe, we're going to have you stay behind just in case there's a massive tornado.
But we were on that same day, if I'm not mistaken, Sam, we were under a tornado watch. And I'll be honest, more times than not when I hear, you know, the KMZ listening area is under a tornado watch or Kansas City's under a tornado watch, I'm thinking probably 10 to 20% chance that anybody's going to see a tornado tonight or this afternoon. And I'm not saying that they thought the same thing, but they knew in St. Louis that they were going to get the worst of it, of what was coming. We were not. Now, granted, we got a lot of rain, 80-mile-per-hour winds. I'm not shaking a stick at that. But we got nothing compared to what they got. They have $1 billion estimated in damage.
So the St. Louis storm was Friday. Our storms were Monday, so a couple of days gap there. But
okay,
yeah.
Beg your pardon then.
The whole we didn't have anybody there to press the button because we were at a conference is the worst excuse.
I didn't think they were pressing the button there at that location also. I've got a friend who works in the National Weather Service out in Dodge County.
Well, they weren't pressing the button there. That's the point.
I didn't think that was the location where the button got pressed.
I was just trying to make a joke.
You got a snort out of me.
How do you not have a remote system?
Or somebody
to turn that on.
Or a second location, i.e. the fire department where they've now moved it. But the fire department didn't have the ability. They were calling from wherever the hell they were, and they were calling the fire department and saying, hey, we need you guys to push the buttons. The fire department said, we don't have the technology nor the ability to do that from here.
But, like, I can open my garage door with my cell phone.
This,
I can
again,
change
goes back
the temperature on my thermostat with my cell phone.
This is the same discussion about the prison breakout. Like, why do we have these institutions managed by our governments, right, that have, like, the lowest grade technology in the world?
Why do we have air traffic control towers using floppy disks?
Yeah.
Well, they're the most reliable.
Yeah.
No sarcasm in my voice at all.
Can you discuss,
do you know,
that?
Evelyn, do you know what a floppy disk is? Never heard of it, I guarantee you. No. No, you don't. She's...
Describe it in 10 words, yeah. But you can't. Antiquated technology that no one uses except the government.
That was almost 10 words.
What, was that almost 10 words?
It was. You got close.
Federal government. Now, am I at 10?
No, you're at 7.
Damn it. Okay. Now you're at 10.
Nice.
Well played. Well played.
I'm like a sly fox over here.
This is from the USA Today. The early bird gets a tequila sunrise and an epic turn up. Jordan Jackson, age 29, ensured that he took advantage of the 2-hour open bar at an experience gaining massive popularity in New York City, online and beyond. And you know what they say. Everything that starts in New York or on the West Coast ends up in Kansas City at some point. The event's unique take on nightlife has attendees like 29-year-old Jordan Jackson waking up on the weekend to pregame at 7:30 with their friends. Instead of the usual, arriving at a packed club after midnight to pop a couple of bottles of overpriced something or other, Jackson decided to take a chance on the early hour R&B-themed party. When he arrived at the venue in New York City, the line was wrapped around the corner at a time when people were typically still catching some sleep, making their coffee, or eating breakfast. There was even a food truck, comedians nearby. The energy was energetic. About an hour after the doors opened, Jackson was fully immersed in the party, dubbed the 9 a.m. banger.
Can't drink all day if you don't start in the morning.
Drinks were flowing. Guests were socializing on the dance floor. The DJ was playing the old and the new hits. And everybody was getting hammered. Well, as somebody who's made no secret of his ability to drink, if you're drinking at 9 a.m., you're what we call an alcoholic.
Or a member of a fraternity.
Darty.
The 9 a.m. banger?
Can we go back to the journalist of this fine story?
Okay.
The energy was energetic.
It's probably written by AI.
Oh, please tell me that's not true.
You've heard of this trend, right? There's AIs writing a lot of, like, just basic news stories now.
Yesterday.
Did you guys? I missed it yesterday.
You're right, Sam. Tell me you didn't listen without telling me you didn't listen.
I didn't listen.
Okay.
The energy was energetic.
That's right there in the story. The energy was energetic. Sam, would you care to read a little bit of your commencement speech?
The enthusiasm was enthusiastic.
So we were trying to... Sam wanted to... get a commencement speech written by AI that was cheesy.
Okay. Okay. Yeah.
What AI did was write a commencement speech about cheese.
Yep.
So Sam
Fondue.
Calls me. I'm on my way into work, and Sam goes, we can push pause for a moment on AI taking over the world. It's not going to happen.
Yeah.
Not yet. Because I told it to write me a commencement speech that was cheesy, and it wrote me a commencement speech and talked about Swiss and cheddar. So I said, well, change it up a little bit and write the word corny. And so we did it, and it did not come back a graduation speech about corn. It was actually kind of corny.
So it took about 15 prompts to get it to even a mildly reasonable graduation speech that was full of puns, because when I said add puns, it added the word pun.
It took you literally.
Many times. And I said, add puns without using the word pun.
Oh, ChatGPT, you're so literal.
Yeah, so we now have that final piece that we can bring to you.
We're getting late for the break, but go ahead and finish with your thought.
First, what inspired it was Kermit the Frog at the University of Maryland. Mm-hmm. That is not Kermit the Frog.
No, I believe that's Johnny Cash.
Okay, this is Kermit the Frog.
Dreams are how we figure out where we want to go, and life is how we get there. So, graduates, I see you. I see you out there. And I know that you will find your people. I know that you're going to take big leaps. And I know that even though you're about to throw your caps in the air, good luck finding them again. I know that you will stay connected to your families, your friends, and your dreams. Because life's like a movie. Write your own ending. Keep believing. Keep pretending. You've all done just what you set out to do. And you're just getting started!
Before we get too far, thank you as always for coming in, my good friend.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us.
Your stories are as great as your personality, and love having you on the air, man.
I love being here.
Somebody on the text line said that they wanted to hear the end of your story so bad that they were about to miss an oil change appointment sitting in their car because they had to get out of the car to hand it over to the mechanic. And the mechanic was outside of the car like, what are you doing?
Let's go.
Just had to hear the end of the story.
The U.S. Treasury Department says it is phasing out production of pennies early next year. After the president asked the agency to stop producing the coin.
Makes sense.
That has been out now. Get out. That has been part of the American currency for more than 200. You should be ashamed of yourself.
You know, I've been waiting for us to get rid of pennies, but that's just my two cents.
You follow Sam out the door. Out. Both of you.
Now, the biggest issue in all seriousness, it costs 2.9, almost 3 cents. To make a penny.
Uh-huh.
But the real issue is not pennies, it's nickels.
Which are more expensive.
14 cents to make a nickel.
Right.
Good luck getting through this story. Go for it.
The Treasury Department said in a statement that the U.S. Mint, which it oversees, will stop producing new pennies once it runs out of blank templates used to make the mostly copper and zinc coins.
Yeah.
Do you think that's a good idea?
Well, it would be a 50-50 if they flipped it.
The agency confirmed that it made its final order of pennies this month.
Delayed reaction.
Maybe they could coin a new denomination.
Scott has steam coming out of his ears right now.
The penny will become the 12th U.S. currency denomination to be retired, joining the half-cent coin, the two-cent. See, now this is some trivia you could use with your family and friends. The half-cent coin, the two-cent coin, the 20-cent piece, and the trime, a silver three-cent piece that was issued from 1851 to 1873. And several others, including like the $1,000 bill, et cetera, et cetera.
We do have 116 billion pennies in rotation right now. So they don't need to mint anymore, really. And when they weeded out the wheat penny, see what I did there?
Weeded out.
It took 102 years.
When they cut the wheat penny?
It took 102 years for it to make its way out of circulation.
This is good. This is all good news. It's time for some change.
I mean, what's the real cost?
Hey, Sam, what? Real quick, totally random. This is from Evelyn.
Is this Evelyn's joke?
This is Evelyn. She wants me to tell you this joke. Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Tank.
Tank who?
You're welcome.
Welcome.
Nice.
He never laughs.
She never laughs.
She just said, he never laughs.
I heard.
Stone Cold Sam. Maybe that's your call sign.
He said by the time he comes back, he will have a call sign for you.
Okay.
It's happening.
He tested one out with me earlier off air. I nixed it.
What was it?
I'll tell you off the air.
It would be funny in a squadron, but probably not on the radio.
Very funny if you were flying 14,000 feet, saving the country. Not appropriate for the radio.
Okay. I can't wait to hear it.
Okay. So, all right, Commander Jesse Reed, as always, thank you, my good friend.
Yeah, good to be
always
here.
Always good to spend time with you on the radio. And Evelyn, thank you. Great job on the weather today. Evelyn Reed was in here doing the weather, her little mini Busby. We got to run for the news. Festivus Friday is next. Get in early, 913-586-7798. That's on the other side.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Dana and Parks podcast. Remember, you can catch us online anytime at KMBZ.com.